Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me here today. Here we are, day one of the year 2024, and this is episode number 436. I'm going to be sharing with you some of the highlights from last year, from 2023, the best of the best, since I truly loved all of the interviews I did last year, but there were several that really stood out to me that actually were very inspiring or even life-changing in some ways for me. And I wanted to share those with you in case you missed any of these episodes. You may want to go back and take a listen. And also to let you know, you can go to the show notes page for this podcast at eolupodcast.com. And there you will find every episode that has ever been aired on the podcast in the archives. On the sidebar to the right, there is a search bar where you can enter a term if there are particular interviews you're looking for. You could enter the name of the person if you know that. Or if you're looking for interviews on a specific topic, say grief or funeral planning or hospice care, you can enter one of those terms and it will pull up for you all of the interviews I've done in the past related to that particular subject. So, for example, for the last couple of years, I've been doing a series with Barbara Carnes, hospice nurse. Every other month, we talk about issues related to hospice. And so if you wanted to go back and listen to all of those recordings, you can just type in Barbara Carnes on the search bar and it will pull up all of those episodes. It may pull up a few extras because if I've mentioned Barbara's name somewhere else, that also may come up. But you'll be able to see those interviews and choose which one you'd like to listen to. So take advantage of that. Go to eolupodcast.com. For today's episode as well, you can go there and you'll find links to all of the previous episodes that I'm going to talk about and share with you. So one last announcement before we get started. Coming up at the end of January, January 30th, I'm going to be hosting Francesca Arnoldi doing a workshop on her book, The Death Doula's Guide to Living Fully and Dying Prepared. So it'll be a free one-hour workshop and she'll walk through some of the exercises in the book and give you some tips. It's kind of a good way to get the year started. That book is also the January reading selection for my online reading group, A Year of Reading Dangerously. You can sign up if you want to keep reading all year long, a new book every month. So sign up for the online reading, get Francesca's book, and then join us on January 30th, and we'll do some of the exercises from the book together. So now we'll move on with my little presentation here on the 2023 highlights from End of Life University. So the first episode I wanted to talk about was from January of last year. This was episode number 385. And it was with Tracy Wheeler of Endwell. And we talked about shifting the culture around end of life and a lot about what Endwell as an organization is doing to help shift the culture. And this was a really interesting conversation for me. I love talking with Tracy. I just love the way she thinks. I love her ideas, and I felt really inspired by our conversation. And here are some of the things we talked about. Why the end-of-life movement needs to expand beyond the perspective of the healthcare industry, and that sometimes we really have been tying end-of-life to healthcare, hospice, and palliative care, where it partially belongs, but over and over, we talk about the fact that dying is not necessarily a medical event. And when we locate death and dying solely within the healthcare system, it makes it harder for us to be inclusive of all of the other aspects of our society and our culture that contribute to our attitudes about death and dying. So that was a really interesting part of our conversation. Tracy talked about why Endwell is working with Hollywood to get more stories written about the end of life, which is so very important because we really need to shift our culture and our mindset as a society around death and dying, and using the popular media like movies and streaming series and television programs and documentaries to help people think about and talk about more easily the end of life. That's how we're actually going to shift attitudes and encourage people to get more comfortable with death and dying. And a specific example of this is the Netflix series From Scratch, which is just beautiful. If you haven't seen it, you need to watch it. And how it portrays very accurately a true story of serious illness and end of life and grief. And it's just so lovely and so beautiful by Tembe Locke. And I highly encourage you to go back and watch it if you have not yet seen it. And Tracy and I also talked about why end-of-life care issues cannot be fixed within the medical system that helped create those very issues. And this was very enlightening to me to think about, because so far, even in my own mind, I've focused most of the changes that need to be made once again on the healthcare system. And granted, our healthcare system needs to shift, but when we can make a shift in society first and in cultural norms and values, that will lead to the healthcare system making a shift as well. But beginning with the healthcare system is in some ways a futile attempt, because the way end-of-life care is being offered and viewed through the healthcare system is very ingrained and very challenging to try to shift. So those are some of the topics that Tracy and I talked about. This was episode number 385. All about Endwell. We talked about the 2023 Endwell conference, which I just had the good fortune of attending at the end of November. And so if you go back and listen to it, that conference already took place, but there will be another one coming up in 2024. And so listening to this conversation should help you get excited for that. Next, episode number 389, I had a conversation with Gregory Rufa and Lama Karma, who are from Anuma, which is a company using virtual reality to create tools for people facing serious illness and end-of-life issues. And this was also a very enlightening conversation. I learned a lot about virtual reality. We talked about how virtual reality can be used in a beneficial rather than a harmful way. But because it's a technological tool, we have to accept the fact that it could go either way. And sometimes our technology is used for purposes that are not so good and not so helpful to people. So what Anuma is doing is creating programs that are inspirational, enlightening, and transformative to give VR its most positive purpose for the highest good of people. And I've had the good fortune of participating in their Clear Light program, and it was beautiful, amazing, life-changing. And so I have highly recommended it. Last year after this interview, I talked a little bit about Anuma's search for people willing to be part of a study they were conducting. And I know they were able to fill in their studies, and many of you may have volunteered to be part of one of those studies last year. So they have had really positive results from their studies, and they're moving ahead trying to find some investors willing to help support the company so that it can move on to its next level, the next step in the process of bringing this technology to the world. So listen to this interview. You'll learn a ton about virtual reality in general and also about the Clear Light program, how it's being utilized to help people dealing with serious illness and also at the end of life. You'll learn why having a transcendent experience like this Clear Light experience can be helpful for anxiety at the end of life and can really help reduce not only anxiety, but pain. You'll learn how the Clear Light program has results similar to a medium dose of psilocybin in terms of alleviating anxiety. And so they'll talk a little bit about the results they have seen so far. There are more results now, and we'll probably do a follow-up later on this year about the work Anuma's doing now. But this is a great introduction and just helpful for all of us to get comfortable with the idea of this technology and virtual reality in general. And they talk a little bit about how they are looking for people to be facilitators of their technology, and that death doulas may be the perfectly trained people who could be facilitators for them. So go back and listen to this episode 389, Virtual Reality as an End-of-Life Tool, with Gregory Rufa and Lama Karma. Next, episode number 393, and this was one of the episodes in the series I'm doing with Barbara Karnes. As I mentioned before, we do a conversation together every other month. I love it. Barbara and I both call upon our years of experience in hospice, and it's sometimes really, really fun to share things that we have witnessed together, because both Barbara and I started back in the old days, as we sometimes call it, when hospice was a little bit different than it is right now. But we try to bring forth the best of what hospice has to offer and things that we hope will be carried on and continued in hospice care now. So in this particular conversation, we talk about end-of-life care for people with dementia. And this is such an important topic. I feel like we don't do nearly enough in our society to support caregivers in general and caregivers who are caring for patients with dementia. We don't talk about it enough. We don't even know how to begin to support people acting as caregivers. And so anything we can do to bring awareness to the situation that they're in and encourage people to learn more, and also to just think about it and notice who in your circle of life, who amongst your acquaintances might be right now serving as a caregiver, a family member, or loved one of someone dealing with dementia. And the more you know about what they're going through, the more you might get creative and think of ways that you could offer some support or some resources or information to them. So Barbara and I talk about the fact that sometimes admitting patients with dementia to hospice is challenging because the last stage of life for dementia patients is different in some ways, and it's very difficult to predict when the end of life is drawing near. And it's a challenge. Hospice has a requirement that patients not be admitted until the last 6 months of life, but that can be very difficult to determine with patients with dementia. Sometimes they get admitted too early and end up being discharged then from hospice care. So that's something we want to be careful about, admitting patients at the right time. We talk about, again, the burden for caregivers for dementia patients who are much more likely to suffer exhaustion and depression in the work that they're doing, and the challenges specifically related to caring for a person with dementia. And then Barbara offers us a marker to use for determining when a dementia patient is eligible for hospice, which is really helpful. As I said, it can be difficult to prognosticate and guess when a person is at that 6 month mark. And so Barbara gives us a helpful tip and a tool to use for that. We also talk about why it's essential to create an advance directive early in the course of dementia while the patient can make decisions. This is really important. And important to determine what this person would wish for themselves, knowing that they have dementia, knowing what may unfold as they approach the end of life, and what choices they would choose now for themselves later in a situation in life. It's essential to have these conversations with our loved ones so that we are better prepared when the end of life comes around and we're not able to have the conversation any longer. Barbara talks about the need for dementia doulas to guide and assist caregivers. I think this is a wonderful idea that end-of-life doulas who feel motivated and inclined to want to help out in these situations, be trained specifically to help families dealing with dementia. And they could develop specific skills and expertise that could help them really guide families and caregivers through this process. And so both of us would love to see that happen, kind of a specialty within the death doula population. And then we also talked about what happens when a caregiver can no longer take care of their loved one at home, which we've both seen happen a number of times. And it's a very challenging situation, but an important one to be aware of and to think about. Next, episode number 395. I totally loved this conversation. When you listen to it, you'll see me like, or hear me lighting up over and over again, like, oh my gosh. I just felt this really deep connection with Wilka Roig and so inspired by her. Her presence and her aura are just so beautiful, and her wisdom is so deep. And it was a pure pleasure to talk with her. And I would love to share this interview with absolutely everyone. If you didn't hear it, please do go back and listen to it. We talked about conscious dying, dream work, and death doulas in Mexico, where Wilka lives. And so she is part of the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Foundation in Mexico and is helping to educate death doulas and really helping to advance awareness and consciousness around death and dying in Mexico. So we talked about death doula training in Mexico and how doulas are being received. Wilka also has some connections with doula trainers in South America, and we talk a little bit about that, comparing how this movement is advancing differently in different countries. We talk a lot about the value of collaborating with other providers and communities to share knowledge. And specifically in countries where the death awareness movement is growing rapidly and in some of the earlier stages, but growing rapidly, it's so very helpful when we can partner together and create teamwork in order to help each other grow and to share knowledge with each other and fill in the gaps where someone else may not have had any experience in one area. We may be able to provide them with wisdom about our experience. Wilka talks about how she helped start the Green Burial Movement in Mexico, and that was very interesting as well. And it shows you what a difference one person can make. One person who's inspired and has an idea and has energy and passion around it can move mountains. It's so amazing to hear her story and to apply it to our own situations back here at home and to think we could be probably making change a little faster here if we could show up every day like Wilka does with her energy and passion. Then we talk a lot about spirituality and spiritual growth and why we have to be able to look at our own mortality if we want to grow spiritually. We simply cannot make the changes we need to make in our spiritual well-being if we're not willing to face the fact that we're going to die one day. So they're tied together. Spiritual growth is essential for us to look at our mortality. And growing spiritually also helps us live more comfortably with the idea that we're going to die one day. Next, we talked about the power of symbolism of dreams and how dreams can help us heal and grow. This totally inspired me in this episode. You'll hear that I said, I really want to start an online dream group. And lo and behold, that actually happened. I got contacted by a number of people, and we're now meeting monthly to share our dreams and help each other process those dreams. And it's really amazing. And Wilka shares ideas about how we should be asking people at the end of life about their dreams. They may not think to tell us something they dreamed, but it can give us a lot of insights and be really important in helping someone navigate their final days, also helping them heal old wounds that may need to be healed before they die and tie up some loose ends. But also, we should be helping healthcare providers look at their own dreams, because they may be having dreams that are very informative for them if they only knew to pay attention to those dreams. And it was a wonderful conversation. I loved it. If you listen, I know that you too will feel really inspired by Wilka Roig. So that's episode number 395. And next, we'll move on. The next episode is number 400, another very inspiring, fascinating conversation with Dr. Libby Solnow of the UK. We talked about the Lancet Commission report on the value of death, which Libby helped write. And so she talks all about the Lancet Commission and what led to this report and the work that she and others did in order to create the report. So we go over it, and she gives us a lot of background information and things that came up as they were writing the report. And it's really the report itself is very inspiring to me. But it also gave me a lot of hope that there is a will and a desire within medicine to want to make some shifts around end-of-life issues and death and dying. And so Libby talks in particular about rebalancing death and dying, and that looking as we in medicine work toward healing and curing people, that goal needs to be balanced with a realistic look at mortality and death and dying. And that's, of course, a topic that we discuss a lot. But I really liked Libby's thoughts about how we create more balance in the way we approach end of life. And also the five principles of a realistic utopia, which are described in the report, very, very interesting. And I went on, I read the entire report. I was very inspired by it after talking to Libby about it. And then this was when I asked her for kind of a takeaway topic or what we need to pay attention to first of all the things that we need to change and fix around death and dying. She said, we need to focus on death literacy first, and that's needed in every society, in every country, everywhere around the world, death literacy. So we need to be teaching a lot more classes and workshops. We need to be helping people in our community develop a language around death and dying and end of life issues, hospice, palliative care, funerals, after death care. We need to do as much educating as we possibly can in our communities, because until people are death literate, they're not going to be able to have the conversations that we wish they would have. So this leads me to want to encourage all of you listening out there to think about how you could foster death literacy in your own community. And it might be something like hosting a death cafe, or hosting Death Over Drafts. One of the interviews I did last year was with Stephanie Elkins, and we talked about the Death Over Drafts movement of meeting in a bar, drinking beer together, and talking about death and dying. Maybe you do that. Maybe you create a community workshop on planning for the end of life. Maybe you work together with a local funeral home to talk about why funerals are important. Maybe you go to your local community college and ask if you could teach a class there if you have the credentials, or go to your library, or show up for organizations like the Rotary Club and just ask if you could give a talk on end of life issues and why it's important to plan ahead for the end of life. You can also go to faith communities where you live and ask if you could be a speaker or you could do a special workshop there. So I really encourage you to think about your own expertise. What is it that you could possibly share? And who would be a partner for you that would give you a platform or host you as a speaker so that you could help promote death literacy in your own community? Let's all get really creative about that this year and think of what we can do to increase death awareness and encourage people to be able to talk about the end of life. And then Libby referred as well to the compassionate communities approach, and I've been planning to have her back as a guest again so we can really dive into the compassionate communities model. And we haven't been able to schedule that yet, but maybe this year we can do that and go into much greater detail on compassionate communities. But once again, this is another interview that I think you'll find really fascinating. So that's number 400. Next episode, number 408, was with Michelle Neff Hernandez, who is the founder of Soaring Spirits International. And that is an online service providing support for widowed people. And it's really amazing. Michelle and I had a great conversation about grief for people dealing with widowhood. And I got to hear all about Soaring Spirits and the amazing work that it's done and doing around the world for people and helping to support people who have been widowed. And Michelle talked, for one thing, about how widowhood may differ from other types of loss and grief. And one of the things that was really interesting to me, she talked about the time frame of widowhood, and that there are some widows who are widowed very early in life at a young age, and some who have been in a relationship for 60 years or more and experience widowhood after that time, and their needs tend to be different. And so at Soaring Spirits, they have different categories for people depending on the length of time they've been in a relationship when a death occurs. She also talked about the use of the term widowed and that it doesn't just apply to people who've been married, but there are other types of relationships that can be lost that can cause us the same grief experience after we go through a loss like this. She talked about tips for those who are newly widowed, and you'll also find those on the Soaring Spirits website. And how Soaring Spirits is connecting people together through support groups. They're finding people with similarities who can kind of gravitate together naturally in terms of their grief and helping them create online support groups so that they have their own community to go to with other people who fully understand the loss that they're going through, who have experienced a similar type of loss. And we did talk about that sometimes it's important to be able to see yourself in others and to see that you're not alone and you're not the only person having this experience right now. And that's one of the ways being in community can be really helpful for someone who's grieving. She also talked about the programs that Soaring Spirits has created and what they're offering on their website. So this is a tremendous resource. And if you don't know about Soaring Spirits, I'd never heard of it before until I talked with Michelle. You need to know about it because I guarantee you will know people who could benefit from the services of Soaring Spirits. So I encourage you, listen to episode 408 and learn all about Soaring Spirits International from Michelle Neff Hernandez. Next, a favorite interview with my friend, Dr. Ira Byock, and we talked at last about his book, The Four Things That Matter Most. And Ira and I have had a number of different conversations about all kinds of topics, but we hadn't yet talked about this book. And to be honest, every time I do an interview with Ira, I get comments from people saying, "Oh, I loved his book, The Four Things That Matter Most. It changed everything for me when I read it." So I wrote to him and said, "Ira, we need to talk about this book. We've never done it before." So this was our chance, and we had a great conversation. And for once, we weren't talking about what's wrong with healthcare and what's going wrong in hospice. It was just really lovely to talk about the four things that he wrote about and to hear the backstory behind how and why he wrote this book. And then all of his experiences with people using these four things, why it makes a difference to simply say these four things when someone is dying. We talked about the importance of forgiveness at the end of life and why people shouldn't wait until their deathbed to practice it. Ira talked about how to use the same four things if your loved one has already died. So, if you're someone grieving after the death of a loved one, you can still benefit by reading the four things and applying them in your grief to the loved one who has already gone. And then what to do when you need to make peace with a loved one with dementia. We bring up the topic of dementia again, and specifically in terms of the four things that matter most and how you might utilize this book if you are a caregiver or a loved one of someone with dementia. And Dr. Byock shares how these lessons and this book have made a big difference in his own life. And so I think you'll find this a really touching and heartwarming conversation that we have. Episode 411, The Four Things That Matter Most with Dr. Ira Byock. Next, episode number 415. This conversation just tugged at my heart with Tula Seratsis talking about end-of-life care for children and families. Tula shares the story of her daughter Angelica, who died of a congenital illness, and with Tula as her caregiver throughout her life. And that Tula's own grief and pain is what helped prepare her to become a death doula for other children who are dying and for families who have a dying child. And we talked about the discomfort that sometimes end-of-life care providers have working with children. And I always found this in hospice that many nurses said, I can't do it. I cannot work with a pediatric patient. And we talked about how we might inspire more people to feel comfortable working with children and their families. Tula talked about how she becomes an advocate for patients and families within the healthcare system and what is needed sometimes when patients and their families are not sure how to speak up about their needs and how to talk to healthcare providers about what they would like to have happen. Tula can accompany them and helps them with these conversations so that they can have their needs met better within the healthcare system. She talked about the need for palliative and end-of-life care for perinatal death and why it's so important that we train doulas to be there as guides, but also train healthcare providers who can show up for families dealing with perinatal death and help them navigate and be guided through this very challenging time. Tula also shared her thoughts on how to talk to a child with a life-limiting condition about death, and that was very enlightening. And then also talking about the importance of a home funeral after a child dies and how she helps families prepare a home funeral or plan a home funeral, who may be even feeling too overwhelmed in the moment to do it on their own. And that's a wonderful, beautiful service that she offers. So Tula is just amazingly compassionate. The depth of her understanding and love and caring is just unfathomable to me. And so I really encourage you to take a listen to this episode. It will bring tears to your eyes, as it did to mine. But so important, and such important wisdom and knowledge to have in your own work. Next, episode 419, which was not so long ago, just a few months ago, the Humane Prison Hospice Project with Lisa Diehl and Fernando Murillo. Fernando himself was incarcerated when he received training as a palliative care provider for his fellow prisoners in the prison, and he's now a trainer helping other prisoners learn how to provide care to their fellow inmates who are approaching the end of life or dealing with aging or serious illness while incarcerated. So we get to learn all about Fernando's journey from his own incarceration to how he is now providing this training. He's such an amazing person. I could listen to him talk all day. The insights that he has had and the compassion that he shows to others. We talk about why palliative and hospice care are desperately needed right now in prisons in the U.S. And this movement is spreading, but somewhat slowly, and we'd like to see it spread more rapidly to more places, especially if you happen to live near a prison and you work for a hospice. Perhaps you might like to consider starting a program like this. The training that is being given to the incarcerated people is extremely beneficial to them, but it actually benefits everyone, the entire prison, the staff included, really benefit when palliative care is being provided, when this type of compassion is being shown. And it really helps the incarcerated people oftentimes to heal their wounds, to learn how to care for someone else, how to be a caregiver, and how to show compassion to someone. And so it's an amazing organization, and I'm so happy to be able to spread the word about it. I do hope you'll listen to episode 419 and consider trying to start a prison hospice project in your community or your state if this sounds of interest to you. It's so valuable, and it's making a really big difference. And then episode number 421, I spoke with my friend Quinn Galloway Salazar about her project, Caring for Veterans Through the End of Life. And Quinn and I first spoke a couple of years ago when she was at the very beginning of this work. And in that interview, we talked about how she wanted to put together a course for people specifically on how to care for veterans and how to meet the needs of veterans at the end of life. And now here, 2 years later, she has done that. She's created an amazing course with the help of Psych Armor, and it has just been released this fall. It's a free course. There's one for caregivers, one for the general public, and one for healthcare providers as well. To talk about what people need to know in order to give the best skilled care, compassionate care, knowledgeable care to veterans. And the interesting thing, sometimes when I bring up this topic to people in hospice, they'll say to me, they look puzzled, and they'll say to me, well, we provide the same care to veterans that we provide to all of our other patients. And we don't see why it should be any different. But that shows the lack of understanding of what veterans have experienced in their lives and how their issues and their situation at the end of life may be very different than the non-veteran population that we're used to working with. So it's so important that we learn the things we don't know. We may not even be aware of an issue because we've never talked about it or heard about it before. So it's important to have open minds and learn what we don't know. And we also really need to recognize our veteran population and be aware in order to give the most appropriate and sensitive care to them, to be aware of the issues that have faced them. And Quinn's course through Psych Armor is amazing. It's so beautifully done, really well filmed, and full of information. So I encourage you, check out this episode 421, and then go to the link in the episode in the show notes to learn more about the course at Psych Armor. So we talk about why some of the issues facing veterans at the end of life are unique and need to be recognized, why end of life education is important for veterans and their loved ones, why healthcare providers in all specialties could use additional training in working with veterans in a compassionate manner. That's so very true. And the importance of developing compassionate communities for everyone. And this term's coming up again. I talked about it with Dr. Libby Salnow in an earlier episode. So this is number 421 with Quinn Galloway Salazar. Take a listen to this and check out that course on the Psych Armor website. Then episode 424 with Dr. Kimberly Kersine. This was another episode I learned so much from Dr. Kersine about implicit bias in end-of-life care. She talked to us about why we need cultural humility along with our cultural competency training, why cultural competency alone is not enough. We talked about how implicit stereotypes and biases contribute to the racial inequities that we're seeing in healthcare and all of healthcare, but our specific concern is in hospice and palliative care. And we need to really understand our own implicit biases in order to see where some of these inequities are coming from. And then when we can look at ourselves and recognize whatever biases we are carrying within and unaware of, it becomes more obvious to us that there are biases built in to the systems that we have created. So that's why we need to start with ourselves first when we're trying to solve these problems. We talk specifically about the current problem of racial disparities in pain management. And it's shocking when you hear the statistics, but people of color receive far less help for pain management than white patients. And so that's a disparity that we really need to correct, especially in our field of end-of-life care. And Dr. Kersine really believes that we have to begin with our own work on hidden biases again if we want to improve racial disparities in advanced care planning and hospice utilization. And she said something that really made an impact on me, which is when we try to quote unquote sell hospice to people of color in their communities, we may be trying to sell them something that they're not really interested in because it simply doesn't match their worldview and what they're looking for. And that instead, we need to tailor what we're offering people to what they actually want and what they are actually looking for. And so we need to do a lot of thinking and be creative here and pay attention and do some listening in order to understand what groups that are rejecting hospice may have other needs that we're not meeting. And it's important that we develop this cultural humility and a person-centered approach if we want to encourage more people to engage with hospice and palliative care. So check this one out, episode 424, Implicit Bias in End-of-Life Care with Dr. Kimberly Kersine. And then lastly, this conversation also really touched my heart, episode 426, Dear Brandon with Christina Christensen and Brenna Brooks. And in this episode, it's the story about a patient named Brandon and a letter he wrote at the end of life that he wanted to share with the world and how his social worker, Brenna, ended up carrying that letter in a Ziploc bag up a trail to the the top of a mountain and placing it under a rock. And the letter itself asked people, you know, please respond, please connect through Instagram, let us know if you read the letter, and also share the letter somewhere else, take it with you and post it somewhere else so someone else can find it. And so, long story short, after a couple of years, this letter has traveled around the world and been read by thousands of people in various places and carried to other places. And Christina Christensen is a filmmaker who happened to find Brandon's letter when she was hiking in Hawaii. So Christina and Brennan met each other. Brenna met each other when Christina found the letter. She had no idea that Brandon was still alive. She contacted Brenna, and Christina ended up coming to meet Brandon and filming a documentary called Dear Brandon about the writing of the letter. Now, subsequently, Brandon has died, but the letter sharing is still happening all around the world. And in fact, after this interview, I got a copy of the letter and I took it with me to Portugal, and I left it there on a hillside after doing a hike. And it was a hike up this path, up above what is called the Fountain of Love. And I left Brandon's letter there underneath a rock. And I haven't heard yet if anyone found it. But the three of us, Christina and Brenna and I, talk all about the synchronicity of this letter and the people who have found it and this really beautiful story that Christina was able to capture in the documentary. And so you'll learn all about how Brandon's letter spread around the world, the impact that writing this letter had on Brandon's own end-of-life journey, which is really fascinating, why Christina was inspired to make a documentary, and then what the goals are for the film and how we can all help support it and spread the word about the film. And at the time of the interview, she was doing a crowdfunding project for the film, which has ended now, and she met the goal for crowdfunding. So we're just waiting for updates and more information on how the film is doing. But this was just such a sweet and inspiring story and really touched my heart. So I encourage you to listen to episode 426 about Dear Brandon with Christina Christensen and Brenna Brooks. So once again, if you go to eolupodcast.com, you'll find the show notes there for every episode I've ever done. And you can scroll backwards through all the episodes to find the ones I've mentioned, or you can search specifically for a topic, a speaker's name, or a title. But oftentimes just a topic is enough to help you find that particular interview. So I hope that you'll do that. I hope you'll take advantage of eolupodcast.com, because I've put in some features there to make it easier for you to connect. I want to mention again, the reading group online, A Year of Reading Dangerously. You can sign up for that as well. And there will be a link on the website, the show notes for this episode. And you can also find a link there to buy my books. I have 4 books that are out in the world right now that are for sale. And I have links at eolupodcast.com to those books. So you can go there and buy them, which is a great way to support the work that I'm doing. And I'll make a little pitch here that without your support, it's a little hard for me to keep this going, because there are significant expenses involved in maintaining a podcast. And I'm just trying to make enough money to offset the expenses, not even to make a profit or anything for myself to take away, just to cover the expenses of the websites that are involved and paying for the production and filming and editing of the videos and the audios, a platform to host the podcast itself, and then a contact managing system for sending out emails to everyone to let you know. All of those add up. And so any support that you choose to offer or are able to offer means everything to me. Again, on the financial side, yes, it's great to have some help with the expenses, but also emotionally and spiritually, it really helps me when you support the podcast because I know that you're listening then and that you value the time and effort that I put into creating these episodes for you. And that, more than anything, helps me stay inspired and want to keep going. I also really appreciate it when you reach out and send me an email or a message. And so I will invite you to go to the webpage, eoluniversity.com/support. You'll find three different ways there that you can support this podcast. You can simply buy me a coffee, and that's a $5 donation that you can make at any time. And it's especially good if you enjoy a particular episode and you buy me a coffee. I kind of learn when I, based on any coffees I get for episodes, what you like hearing and like listening to. So buying me a coffee is a fun way to just here and there, send me a little gift and a little thoughtfulness, but it also cues me in that this was an episode that you specifically liked. You can also go and use PayPal as a way to make a donation. You don't have to have a PayPal account. But there is a PayPal link that lets you pay with a credit or debit card to make a one-time donation of any amount that you choose, whatever that is. And that's very welcomed as well. And the third way you can offer support is to join my team on Patreon. I have a Patreon page, patreon.com/EOLU. And the Patreon team is kind of a community that has been forming around End of Life University. And when you're on the Patreon team, you receive certain bonuses. Everyone gets the End of Life news update once a month, where I curate certain news articles from things that have happened in the past month, which kind of keeps you updated on what's going on in this End of Life arena. And, helps you learn about new research that's being done or new programs being offered or something of interest that's out there, articles that you might want to read yourself or share with other people. I am going to start something new called What to Watch once a month, and I'm going to share some of the interesting things you can watch on a streaming channel or perhaps documentaries and films that I think might be of interest that perhaps refer to end of life issues, but sometimes are just inspirational or something of beauty that you may benefit from watching. So I'm going to share that with you once a month, what to watch for Patreon supporters only. And also from time to time, some interview extras when we'll maybe go behind the scenes and I'll in some of the interviews with some of the guests I interview, I'll share some bonus content and extra content with you so you can see what's going on there behind the scenes. And then also, depending on what level you support the podcast, there's some physical merchandise that you'll receive. You have to enter your mailing address so that it can be sent to you, but things like a sticker, a mug, or a little mini poster that you might receive, depending on your tier level. So that is for people who joined the Patreon team, and I'm hoping to get more supporters through Patreon because it's a great way for us to communicate and stay in touch and form a community. And I would like to do more to build that community in the year 2024. So thank you so much for joining me here today and listening in to my highlights from 2023. I'm really looking forward to this next year, excited for all that is to come. And I'll be back next week. I have interviews coming up with Amy Wright Glenn, Barbara Carnes, Stephen Jenkinson. You can look ahead to those will be coming up over the next month or so. So be sure and tune in every week. Be sure and subscribe and leave a rating and review wherever you happen to listen. And do go to eolupodcast.com and check out the show notes and the search bar there. Until we're together next week, remember, we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of your very precious life. Bye-bye.